Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
Good. That was a fantastic game.
Never in doubt.
Never was. Never in doubt in Connor McDavid's mind, I don't think. Bruce, this is our two good things, two bad things, two numbers in one conundrum podcast about Edmonton's great grinder of victory over the Boston Bruins, 2-1 in overtime, as Jack Michaels likes to say.
Overtime.
Yes. He gives birth to overtime. He summons it from the void. All right. Bruce, what's your good thing?
Yeah, this was one of those kind of games I think warrants too. I'm going to single out Ryan Nugent-Hopkins first, because without his heroic play very late in the game, this one has a much different and unhappier ending with Boston winning 2-0, because Boston was leading 1-0 when, who was it, blocked the shot at the blue line. 40, was it 43? Was it Heinen? I think so. And he blocked Evan Bouchard's shot, and it took a favorable bounce up the wall, and off he went after it. And Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, from the center of the ice, realized he was the only guy that had even a snowball's chance.
Didn't look like he was going to get it.
I didn't think he could get there. Like, he was 5 feet behind, and Heinen was moving. And Nuge just put on the afterburners, just like he kind of did against St. Louis here, was it 3 games ago, when I also singled him out as one of my good things for a great defensive play. Well, this one definitely saved the game. There's no other way to put it, because that was a free empty net goal. And he comes steaming back, and with a good long reach, got his stick in just enough to deflect the puck off the side of the net. Like, he just barely got enough of it. And I thought it was going to be, frankly, a breakaway. And, you know, I was wondering if the guy was going to do the old Ridley Greig from 5 feet out, because it looked like he was behind everybody. And instead, there's good old Nuge coming back to put it in the corner. And then it went into the corner, and there was like 5 Oilers trying to dig it out of the corner. And it was 20 seconds ticking off the clock. And then finally, they were able to get it out and down, and Ullmark froze it, and then the good things happened after that. But none of the really good things, like the Edmonton goals, would have happened in this game without that stalwart defensive play by Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. So credit where due.
Yeah, it looked like he was going to score for sure. Like, in the moment, that the play was shaping up, he just looked like he was wide open to go in there and get that shot, but Nuge quickly cut down the angle and got up to him.
A movie we've seen so often, it seems like every time Edmonton pulls their goalie, not only do they never score, but the other guys always score. And I mean, Drysdale in the post game saying that Edmonton's not very good in this, hasn't got a good record in the 6-on-5. Well, it's better now, but that'll be the other good thing.
Bruce, my good thing is Connor McDavid. He absolutely willed his team. You could actually see it happening.
Yes.
Him making up his mind. This is the moment, twice in this game. But he came out really strong against Boston. He and Drysdale were strong right from the start. McDavid led the team with 7 shots. 5 of them were grade A shots. And that's more significant because the Oilers only had, let me just see here, the Oilers had 11, and Boston had 8 grade A shots. So McDavid with 5 of the Oilers' 11 grade A shots. And of course, he set up Dreisaitl on 2 of the others. Mm-hmm. So he was involved in this game. But the moment when he came alive was when they needed that goal right at the end of the game. And He just decided he is throwing everything. He just got the puck with such incredible determination and just hurled his body at the net and put the got the puck on net with a hard backhand. I think it was a backhand shot, a hard backhand shot, which Draisaitl jammed into the net. And the winning goal was the same thing in overtime. He just all of a sudden exploded from the top of the blue line area, top and around a defender, just like he had done in overtime the other game when he scored on the famous hummingbird shot.
Mm-hmm.
This time he made a beautiful pass. Bruce, he just is. I thought last year that he was going to will his team to victory. I'm a little more skeptical of the Oilers this year because of their defensive breakdowns last season. But if anyone's going to will their team to victory this year in the Stanley Cup playoffs, it's Connor McDavid. He is just such a determined hockey player right now. He is fanatical about victory. And in the last, the Oilers had that great spell of defensive play in January. They fell apart in the early to mid February, but in the last little while, Bruce, they've been getting it back on defense. And McDavid is a huge part of that. His commitment to defensive play and his determination to win. And I suspect his leadership / tongue lashings, perhaps, or conversations with other players about their responsibility to victory and to commitment into winning. I have no idea about this, but I think just seeing his demeanor on the ice, he is now pushing the other players as hard as he's pushing himself. They're feeling it. Mm-hmm. I think this whole team feels it. And again, I no idea. That's just speculation on my part, but that's how I see it.
Yeah, I don't know what tongue lashing. I would put it this way: from what we can see, he's raising the bar for the whole team, and they have to respond as best they can. I mean, obviously, no one can quite play the game at his level, but he's just so determined and relentless. And tonight, even as the clock was winding down, I thought, geez, McDavid's playing well in this game. It just can't quite seem to break through. They got to get one somehow. And he was on both the tying and winning goals, as you say, where he just played a little keep away along the outside and made the deadly pass that wound up with the puck in the net. And passing to the right guy mind. But both times, like he beat, I think, two guys one-on-one on the outside. I know on the winner, he beat Charlie McAvoy, who's one of the best defensemen in the NHL, and he just made him look silly.
And he is good, isn't he, Charlie McAvoy?
Yeah, he's real good.
The reason I say tongue-lashing, and again, this is just speculation on my part with McDavid, like the reason I think there's a strong verbal component to his leadership right now, And it's probably fairly direct at times, is we've seen this in interviews with him. He has an acerbic sense of humor. And I just see that as someone, yeah, if he's mad, he's going to let him there. He's at that stage of his career where he's going to let them know. It's not just with his on ice. He's just like, I think as a younger player, he really was someone who just did it with his on ice play, led that way. But I suspect, and it would be interesting to hear from team insiders, whether they know or not, excuse me, I think it is the case that he's probably directing, he's commander in chief, verbally as well. Bruce, what's your second good thing?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the other guy, Leon Draisaitl, who had 6 shots on net tonight. So Edmonton had 26 on the game and McDavid and Draisaitl had 13. And the entire rest of the team had the other 13. And Leon, like Connor, was involved in 9 grade A shots by the Oilers. And just looking at the document, David, I think there's 12 altogether. And they were each involved in 9, including basically everyone in the back half of the game.
Well, and they had 10 of the grade A shots between them, I see, Bruce.
Yeah.
Between Draisaitl had 5 and McDavid had 5.
Yeah, out of 12. They each were involved in 9, and 5 of them came off of their own sticks. And I'll say, It's just because there's such a strong sentiment out there in oil country, almost universal. Well, the Oilers got to keep their centers, got to keep those two guys apart. They're going to be a way better team with those two guys running two different lines. Well, each of those guys is way more dangerous when the other guy's out there. And it took those two guys together to break through the staunch defense of the Boston Bruins, who I thought played a fantastic defensive game tonight. They had sticks in the lanes. There was not a thing as an unchallenged shot or pass even, where it looked like there was, you know, a quick pass through and someone's going to go in. Nope, pass doesn't get through because a stick got on it. And only those two guys executing at the highest level were able to break through and make the pass and the deflection in the one case, and the shot, even the game-winning goal, you know, there was a replay I thought it probably had, and there was one angle that conclusively showed that Dreisaitl's one-timer caught the shaft of the stick of Brandon Carlo and deflected down and to the left and through Linus Ullmark, who had pushed across to play the shot at the post where I think originally it was going, and then Carlo, being in the lane, got a stick on it, but it worked to his disadvantage and wound up going through. It was a very powerful shot. He just wasn't able to get enough in the way of it to stop it from reaching its destination. In addition to the two goals that won the 2-1 game and the six shots and the nine contributions, I also want to commend and compliment Leon Draisaitl for hammering Brad Marchand with a great open ice hit. Just
and then Perry got him later.
Yeah. Marchand went good. Where angels fear to tread, and Leon said, "You're going to skate in my lane? Okay, sit down."
You know, Bruce, legal.
It
was a legal hit, yeah. I've always been on team split up McDavid and Draisaitl, mm-hmm. or at least certainly
most,
since 20,
most people have.
Since 2017, since Draisaitl was so dominant in the playoffs against Anaheim. And it was such a key moment for the Oilers. And I just saw him as this two-way force. So I think the argument you made was very convincing, actually. That the way the NHL is being defended right now and how hard it has become to score goals, mm-hmm. you might need to put them together to score a goal, to score some goals in overtime. There might be lots of 2-1 games in the playoffs. You know, in the six-team era of the NHL, which was a real dead puck era of the NHL, as I understand it, all the good players were on one line, unless you're the Montreal Canadiens and you could have two lines of good players. But generally speaking, those
they
teams...
stack the first lines, yeah. It's always
stacked,
been a thing.
They've always stacked the first line. Well, you can stack these guys. Now, the question is, it makes to me then all the more imperative that you acquire a defensive center that you can play, or a strong center you can play, another strong center. If you're gonna do that, I think you need that. You need that extra center then. I'm not sure who they're gonna trade for in that regard, but and I'm also not convinced that Leon's gonna be a great defensive center himself, even in the playoffs. I'm not sure that that's in his makeup, but I think he can be a pretty good defensive winger, and McDavid can be a great defensive center. So you will have, the top line will be solid, really solid defensively, I think, if they're together. They weren't always that way in the past, but I think between the commitment of Draisaitl and McDavid to defense, and Hyman being this year also more committed to defense, I think we will see them be that being a real outscoring line. I mean, one of the reasons people were against that line being together was they weren't as dominant as they, you know, they were like 55% when they should be 60 to 70%. It felt like with that much talent on the line. So yeah, for those reasons, I'm much more open to see what happens next. Let them experiment here, try different things like they're trying with Nurse and Daharnay, which worked out again tonight pretty well. And maybe we'll see this, but I'm not so sure defensively if Nugent Hopkins' line can match up against a really good line with Kane on it. I know Janmark and Nuge can probably they could get it done, especially if Nuge is a winger. But that's where you'd like to see maybe like a really strong center traded for, which is going to be, that would be really hard to get a second line center. I don't know if
Adam Henrik is the talk.
Well, Nick Dowd?
No, he's a fourth line center, third line center. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's Manny Malhotra kind of player where he, you know, he takes like super tough on zone assignments and comes out on top. I don't think he's ever been a top six, but he's certainly a very strong bottom six. He'd be a great add.
Yeah.
But Adam Henrik would also potentially be a good add. And of course he's quite capable of playing the center position or wing.
Okay.
Henrik. So he's another guy after Oilers' heart. They've got several center slash wingers on the team already.
Yeah. Fortunately, there is a lot of forwards available at this time right now. There really are, I think. Bruce, my second good thing is just the maturity of the Oilers, even though they got down in the third period, 1-0 on a pretty tough play. They didn't collapse. They weren't getting anything either. And even then, they didn't go crazy trying to pinch when they shouldn't or take, you know, streak out for a pass when they shouldn't in the third period. Boston only had two grade A chances at even strength in the third period. One of them was the goal. And the Oilers didn't have any until they scored. Right. So it was a very smart, mature defensive game throughout by the Edmonton Oilers, including when there was a lot of pressure on them in the third period to win and to get a goal to come from behind. They really did, as the players say, the coaches want us just to keep to the game plan and not take chances. Well, that's exactly what happened. It was a very impressive performance in that regard.
Give or take Kevin Bouchard's pass into the slot about 5 minutes left. But
oh, that'll happen.
Yeah.
If you're going to break up the middle,
that's now. Cost of doing business.
It you know what, with Evan Bouchard it is. And if you're going to break up the middle, that's also part of the cost of doing business. And you have to break up the middle. You just can't go up the boards in the NHL. So that will happen now and then. Unfortunately, Stuart Skinner came up big, as he did a number of times. Stuart Skinner had a great game when he was needed to be great, except on the one goal, which wasn't really his fault. But what is your bad thing, Bruce?
It is the one goal, and I'm not going to be blaming him.
No.
Which was a 2-on-1 with a good cross-seam pass, and the guy hammered the one-timer, and Skinner tried to get over, but, I mean, it was like the Draisaitl shot in overtime, right? It's either going to hit you or it's not going to hit you, and it didn't hit him. You know, it's not like he had a chance, I didn't think, to be there and waiting for it.
No, he didn't.
But what went wrong was, well before that, was just a little bit of inattention to detail. It was a nothing play, and Boston shot the puck up into the neutral zone, and Cody Ceci sort of fronted on the high Boston forward, or I guess from their perspective, the low forward, the third of the three attackers. And Nugent Hopkins and Janmark were up the ice, and Kane was on the left wing, and he was F3. And in theory, he should have been, you know, somewhere closer to the middle of the ice and helping out the D-men. Anyway, he was nowhere to be found. And when the puck got through Ceci, all of a sudden there's the two Boston guys and only Brett Kulak left. And they executed the 2-on-1 to high level and got a good hard shot that was on and in the net. Just a small thing, like Edmonton's defensive play was pretty good in this game. And this was one time that they had a little lapse that, you know, it cost them. There's a couple other times it could have cost them, and Skinner bailed them out with a couple of diving stops. So one with the blocker was unreal. So anyway, it's only a bad thing when the puck actually winds up in the net, right? So that was my easy choice. Of all the defensive mistakes, that was the one that hurt. And it looked for quite a while that it was going to cost the Oilers a hockey game.
Yeah, CC, he got caught. He got caught in no man's land with a player behind him. And, man, that happens to defensemen. It happens fast. And he's just thinking the whole time he's skating back, watching him go in, he's just thinking, oh, frack. He He knows he made a mistake. He's been struggling in February. He had a couple good games there, but that was a bad moment for Cody Ceci. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about trade things in a second here. My bad thing, Bruce, the Oilers finally had a chance with about 4 minutes left. McDavid charges in, his first charge, super hard charge in, and he went down. Now, did he take a dive? I would never say that, so I won't. There was a penalty called, and they were playing him pretty hard there. And might have been a veteran move, though. Anyway,
he earned that power play 20 seconds at a time because he got fouled on several different occasions in this game.
There you go. Well put, Bruce McCurdy. All right. They get a power play, and this is it. This is the moment. But it was the weirdest power play. First of all, Boston is such a smart team, and the puck goes in the corner, and Brandon Carlo, instead of doing anything, like trying to shoot it out desperately, he decides, I'm 6'6", 240 pounds, big fat legs, thick, strong legs. I'm just going to stand here with this puck between my skate blades wedged up against the boards. And he killed off a good 20, 25 seconds.
Yep.
That way, it was a brilliant play, veteran play by Brandon Carlo. Vincent Desharnais is probably at least as old as Brandon. Well, he's maybe a little younger than Brandon Carlo, maybe a year younger. Or he's probably about the same age as
Brandon Carlo. 2015 draft, Carlo went in that 2015 draft with just after the number 33 that was part of the Griffin-Reinhardt trade.
Yeah.
There's some intel that suggests Carlo would have been the Oilers' pick had they still had the pick.
Bob Stauffer's only made that point about 1,000 times. Yeah, first, well, so we can't be sure of it.
I'd call that some intel.
We can't be sure of it. Desharnais went the next year, I believe. Did he?
Yes, 2016 in the 7th round. But he was drafted as an
overage guy, wasn't he?
So he was 20. Yeah, he's actually older. You're right.
Older than Carlo.
He was the famous 21st round draft pick because it was his third year of eligibility.
Where they dropped in this old guy. All right. So anyway, Desharnais should learn from that. He should do that sometimes. That was a great play by Carlo. And then they just make another series of smart hustle plays. They're such a smart defensive team, such a smart team overall, Boston, that they thwart the Oilers. But the Oilers are rushing it. The puck goes out. Instead of winding it up properly, having McDavid go far back and then come at full speed, he kind of goes, for the first time, he kind of goes halfway back. And he's not hitting the blue line with any speed. Then the next time he goes all the way back, but when he gets the puck, he's not skating fast either. So it wasn't the typical kind of Oilers zone entry. They don't get that zone entry, so it's a minute into the power play before they have full possession of the puck. And then they refuse to set up Bouchard for the shot. That's the only thing that was there. And I don't know, again, this is what mystifies me. Who's to blame? Is it Bouchard not getting in position to shoot it? Or their reluctance, McDavid and Draisaitl, to pass it back to him for that shot because they think, and they're quite right very often, that they can do better just taking it to the net. In any case, they don't get it. They get nothing until finally they orchestrate a one-timer shot by Draisaitl, which was really kind of the lowest level of one-timer from Draisaitl that you'll see. It was such a predictable move and predictable shot. The goalie was way over. He was there before the shot went off, and it wasn't even – it was a grade-A shot. You have to call a one-timer from Draisaitl from there a grade-A shot, but it wasn't as usual kind of going to go in a third of the time. So that was my bad thing. That power play lacked – energy, execution, and conviction, and strategy, tactics.
Well, Boston kept breaking up the plays.
They did. Give credit,
I mean, this was a game. I mean, oddly, in this game, each team had 26 shots, but Edmonton had 71 shot attempts, and Boston had 45. So there was 28 Edmonton shots that were blocked and another 17 that missed the target. And I would suggest several of those were because they were being defended and challenged and hurrying the shots that they weren't hitting the target. So it was Edmonton carried the play based on Corsi shot attempts, but on actual shots on net, it was dead even. And one of the fine features out there in Oilers Twitter is a device called the Deserve to Win O-meter. And tonight's Deserve to Win O-meter was split exactly 50-50 Edmonton-Boston. This was a very even game. And fitting that it went to overtime, it would have really sucked to get 0 points out of that game. So that's where the 6-on-5 team coming through in the crunch was pretty sweet.
Is there a Deserve to Win O-meter, like an actual Twitter account called that?
I'm trying to remember who posts it, but it's my son's always pointing it out to me, and he did again tonight. But it just shows a meter, and sometimes, you know, there'd be sometimes games where Oilers would outshoot the other guys 40-18, lose 4-3 or 3-2 because the goalie stood on his head, and they deserve a minute. The win-o-meter would say 85% Oilers, but guess what? They didn't win. Well, tonight it was a dead even 50-50 split right down the middle.
Here we go. I thought I found it. Oilers, no results for Oilers Deserve to Win-o-meter.
Yeah, it's not Oilers. It's for, I think they do it for every game.
Oh, I see. So it's just
all the games, yeah.
I see. Okay. That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
What's your numero?
Okay. There's lots of numbers to go from, and I probably dropped several of them already, but I'm going to go with the number 5. That's the number of block shots by Vincent Desharnais tonight. Of the 11 Boston shots that Edmonton blocked, 5 of them by the one guy, Vince Desharnais, who is a shot-blocking machine because he is so adept at being in the right spot to be in the shooting lane. And he's so bloody huge that if he's in the lane, the chance of a puck getting by and through him, it's not all that great. And I loved his game tonight. Just you can see him gaining confidence by the month as he plays in this league. And more, you know, nothing really fancy with the puck, but he handles it cleanly enough and he moves it along. But he just gets in the lanes and he battles, and he had one enormous battle tonight with who was the guy? Justin Brazeau of Boston, who, like Vince himself, is like a 26-year-old rookie that took years and years, and he just got called up. I was hearing about him earlier today, and he's about the same size, 6'5 or 6'6, and, you know, a big kid that took a long time to make it. Anyway, that there was this probably 20 to 30 second where the two of them were isolated one-on-one, Vince blocking out Brazeau from the front of the net, and Brazeau giving as good as it gets, and the puck went behind the net, and they're battling along the wall for it. It was just one extended battle. Anyway, Vince is not one that's going to put up big numbers, but I suspect he might in this one category, block shots. Like I say, 5 of Edmonton's 11 in this game. And this isn't the Deserve to Win a meter. This is something called, this one's a bit of fun too. This is the hockey stat cards, the game score impact cards. After each game they post them. And they have positive and negative contributions to offense, defense, individually, on ice, power play, penalty kills. So there's several components to it. And so whatever the numbers are, I'm more interested in the order of the guy's net contribution. And tonight, Connor McDavid was number 1, go figure. Vincent Desharnais, number 2 on the Oilers. Darnell Nurse, his new partner, number 3. Meanwhile, at the bottom end of the same chart, Cody Ceci and Brett Kulak got the bottom.
That's for defense for all players.
That's for all players. So if they're trying to learn something.
They're ahead of McDavid?
Desharnais was 2nd to McDavid, and CeCe and Desharnais and Nurse were 2nd and 3rd on the team. CeCe and Kulak were 17th and 18th. So they struggled, and the new pairing of Nurse and Desharnais did not struggle, according to this measurement, which is not exactly 100% precise, I'm sure. But I just thought it's one of the things they're trying to do by splitting Nurse and CeCe is trying to figure out who's the problem here. And
good idea.
Based on tonight's stats, it's CeCe that was still struggling, and Nurse was doing just fine on a different pairing without CeCe. So maybe that tells him something.
This was the most convincing game for Nurse and Desharnais to together by far. Mm-hmm. It was against a really good team, yep. and they played well.
Yep.
They weren't great. I gave them both sixes, I think. Mm-hmm. I liked their play. Nurse made one poor clearance, led to a grade A shot in the second. just fired around the boards instead of making a play. And but they were good. Like
they were.
That was their best game together, and they had a convincing game. I thought the best pair was Ekholm and Bouchard, even with Bouchard's more glaring mm-hmm. mistake. Bouchard helped create four grade A shots with his play. He was fantastic on the. They were just so fantastic moving the puck in a way that Daharnay and Nurse are not. That I would favor them, but you know it is a. Well, again, let's not move on. I won't get into this because it's going to be our conundrum. But I'll talk about CC then a little bit more. Bruce, my number is one, and it refers to two things. Jesse Puljujärvi scored his first goal of the year for the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight. Way to go, Jesse! A major comeback for him. A long road back from surgery and injury again. I hope he stays healthy at least, so we can see what kind of player he might be. I think he can be an NHL player. I think he can be, personally, I see him at this point. His high end is a third line two-way winger, kind of in the Matthias Janmark mold, mm-hmm. where he could kill some penalties, check, and add some offense now and then. But a 6'4 guy doing that.
Right.
So why not? He could do that. He's got all the... So that's what I would see the upper end, and I hope he gets there. The other one is the at this point, and the Vancouver Canucks are playing right now. They're losing 1-0 right now to the LA Kings. They're playing now. Vancouver's in the situation where they're playing the desperate team, right? Although Vancouver might be getting a little desperate. Vancouver has just one more win, Bruce, than the Edmonton Oilers this year. One more victory, and the Oilers have three games in hand. So tonight it'll be four when they finish tonight's game. If they lose, it'll be so they're still 85 points to 78 points. So they've got more points, significant amount of more points. But they've one more win than the Oilers this year, Bruce. So I like that. I like how that made me feel happy. You know, the Oilers have more wins right now than the Boston Bruins this year.
Good.
Yeah, it is good. The Oilers. More wins than any team in their division in their Western Conference than Winnipeg and Vancouver, which have 39 each,
mm-hmm.
and more wins than any team in the East, but the Rangers who have 40 and the Panthers who have 43.
Yeah, well, they've won 33 of their last 42.
That'll get you there.
So they're saying tonight they're 32. 8-1 in their last 41 games. Well, that's half a season. Well, 32 is half of 64 wins in a season. It's just a ridiculous number.
That's what I thought they'd get at the start
Boston
of the year.
Boston set the league record last year with 65 wins in a season. And Edmonton over the last 41 games are half of that. But, of course, the trick is keeping up all season. And they lost, 12 of their first 18. So they've been...
Swimming
uphill ever since then, but they've swum to the top of the mountain, using my horribly mangled metaphor.
like Noah's Ark.
Second place.
Make it worse.
Second highest, but yeah, right. They're swimming so high, they might get the bends.
I thought they were headed to like 120 point season at the start of the year. That's what I would have guessed. All right, Bruce, the conundrum. The Vegas Golden Knights traded 2 second-round draft picks for Anthony Mantha. I have to admit, I'm a little bit relieved that the Oilers didn't trade for Anthony Mantha, even though I know that Anthony Mantha could come alive and score a big goal. He's just a big, forceful player at times. He wouldn't have been my first choice as the kind of player the Oilers need. He just strikes me as a little too similar of some of the guys the Oilers have already. So, but anyway, they did get this winger who's having a pretty good year in Washington, Anthony Mantha, I guess. What is he? Let me just check here.
It's like middle of the year, I would say.
Typical Anthony Mantha kind of year, maybe?
Yeah, I think he's maybe got 18 goals.
6'5", 234. He's got 20 goals.
Oh, he's up
20 goals in 56 games. 20 goals in 56 games.
12 assists or something.
The most goals he's ever scored in a year is 25 goals in 67 games. Yeah. So he's never been a big point producer in the NHL, and he's got a fairly hefty contract. I wonder if Vegas got them to eat any.
They ate half of it.
Oh, frack.
It was a second and a fourth, and Washington even ate half of it. So it
a second and a fourth?
Oh, yeah. Geez. Yeah.
So a second-round draft pick and a fourth for eating. So Vegas could make another trade. Frack.
Yep.
Okay, Bruce, the conundrum is, what are the Oilers going to do to match? And we've been going, looking around this. So when we talk about needs on the team, the fans in a Cult of Hockey poll last weekend, you know, 54% said they need another top four D-man. And that's not, doesn't seem like it's in the cards. It doesn't seem like that player's available. I mean, if the Oilers had their druthers, maybe that would be their first choice as well. Mm-hmm. But and they tried to get Tanev. So, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. And it's Cody Ceci, or this, you know, they're going to bring in a seventh D-man, Bob Stauffer says. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe that seventh D-man will outplay Ceci and take his spot, or maybe Philip Broberg will. Mm-hmm. Still not too late. It's unlikely, highly unlikely. But Ceci is struggling. He is the guy who's struggling. And I think he could handle third pairing minutes, though, with Kulak. I'm not worried about that in terms of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I think he could crank it up and get it done in that role. What do you think?
Yeah, there were some rumors floating around today from Elliot Friedman again. And this is old territory, but apparently, you know, they're stirring at the ashes and trying to figure out if there's anything there. And this is with Philadelphia for either Seeler or more likely Sean Walker. Who was an LA Kings defenseman who got traded to Philly last year when they got rid of the boat anchor Cal Peterson contract. And they sort of threw in Sean Walker, who surprised everybody and been a solid sort of second defenseman with good metrics this year, a smaller right shot defenseman who's a good puck mover. And the thought was that it would be the same kind of offer, CC plus the first to get Walker, who's expiring.
Mm-hmm.
And would be just so un-Ken Holland-like to make that trade. You know, Sean Walker is a 29-year-old veteran. He's played in his career two playoff games. And they were last year against Edmonton. He was the sixth defenseman for two games, and he was in the press box for the other four games. 29 years old. Like, Philip Broberg's got 10 playoff games. I can't imagine Ken Holland moving out a bigger veteran defenseman like CeCe for a smaller, less proven, let's face it. And Walker, when he was in LA, he's obviously gelled under John Tortorella the way he didn't under Todd McClellan in Los Angeles. He was an okay defenseman there, but nothing too special. And who's to say that he got traded to another team and he just fit in and carry on at his high level of play this year? Maybe he's sort of caught lightning in a bottle there in Philly, and he's got the right partner and the right assignment and so on. Anyway, I just think it would be very un-Ken Holland-like to trade a big, over 30 veteran defenseman for a younger, smaller, way less experienced defender.
So you don't see that happening?
I think it would make more sense, honestly, if they were to trade just the first for Walker with half of his salary retained and keep CeCe. And now you've got seven defensemen who are NHL experienced. And,
well, maybe that's what they're contemplating.
You're covering your depth off in that fashion. Because if you go all in with Walker and he doesn't fit, you're in big trouble.
So. Almost all of his points, Bruce, are at even strength.
Mm-hmm.
Walker, 22 mm-hmm. points, 20 of them, I think, at even strength or close to that.
CeCe's got like 18 points, and I'm guessing all of them are at even strength. They certainly aren't on the power play.
That's true.
You might have got a shorty in there.
That
somehow.
Is a safe bet. so I can't say. I have no idea. I haven't watching Sean Walker. I can't say. When you described him though, like because I'm guilty of what's that called? Motivated thinking. When you were describing this smaller defenseman who's come into his own and is moving the puck well, I thought Anton Strahlman. So that's my motivated thinking on the topic.
Barry.
Yeah, Tyson Barry.
Yeah. Hopefully, CeCe's got 18 points this year, and 17 of them are at even strength, and one is shorthanded. He's played 20 minutes and 15 seconds per game, and he's been over 20 minutes every year but one of the last eight average, which is a top four defenseman all the way.
And Walker he's played 1647 even strength again, third most for the Penguins, or for the Flyers, after Sanheim and York. Yeah, so 1647. Time on ice per game is 1936.
Right. So he's right there.
Like if he's a real 5'11 and a real one, it was at 196. He's not that small, but 191. So he's not a bigger NHL player, but Bruce, if he can move the puck safely and soundly and defend safely and soundly, I mean, that is Anton Strahlman. And if he can do those things, then I'm not against such a trade. And I can't say whether he can do it or not. Like, I don't know. It sounded like the player from Nashville, Carrier, was that kind of player. And he's, you know, unlikely to be available now because of Nashville's winning streak.
So I believe ended tonight.
Yeah.
In overtime to Ottawa, if I saw what I thought I saw on the way by.
Yeah,
coming on here.
Kraken beat the Jets, and...
Yeah, they did too.
The Blues lost.
Habs beat the Predators in overtime, so streak is over. So, but they're still right in the hunt. Anyway, Walker has actually got fewer points at even strength than Cody Ceci has.
For there whatever you go.
That's worth. Mind you, he's not passing puck to Connor McDavid, so that's always going to put a thumb on the scales. But
now and then, yeah, it does a little bit.
Not that CeCe's been playing with McDavid a lot, but I mean, Philly is not the offensive powerhouse that Edmonton is. I mean, that's a given.
So in terms of a forward, if they're going to go with McDavid and Drysdale on the line, I would really prefer them to go hard for the best center they can get.
Yep.
And make that their play, because that center they acquire may be, like, I like Nugent Hopkins at center, but I don't know if I completely like his play on defense all the time. I just think he can get overpowered in playoff games, in really tough games. He can go missing on the attack, and as hard as he works and as smart as and conscientious as he is on defense, he can also get overpowered down there. So I'm not exactly certain about him as a second line center, and that line of Kane, Janmark, and Nugent, whatever it would turn out to be with Kane on it. Geez, you need a really good defensive center with Evander Kane. That's my thought, Bruce. Like, so I'm not sure. This is the conundrum, and a lot of it will come down to who's available and at what price. Like their assessment, like. They might want, like we say, they might want the defenseman most of all, but that player might not be there. So they're going to have to spend it on they're more likely than to spend it on a forward. Yeah. I don't know about the winger thing, though, because you can play McLeod on the wing. You got Fogel. Yeah. Fogel's points per 60 at even strength for the last 2 years, Bruce, as is good as Pavel. It's just right there with Pavel Buchnevich.
Yeah.
And Tyler Toffoli, and better than Elias, significantly better than Elias Lindholm. I mean, it's he's so underrated, and I can't believe there's actually talk of moving out.
We need right his now. Cap space. I think we need his offense.
What is like that? He's
number four on Edmonton for even strength points. He's ahead of Nugent Hopkins. He's ahead of Kane. He's only behind the three, superstars on the first line at the presently comprised. He's fourth on the team. $2.75 million. It's like, what you got? Want to cash that in to get somebody who does what? Scores a bunch of points on the power play on some other team that he's never going to get that chance here because Edmonton's power play is not going to. I can't think of a guy that's going to come in here on the trade deadline that they could possibly get who would dislodge any of the five guys on Edmonton's first power play unit. Can you?
No, It's all even strength. They're
You wrote that in your post, and I thought, yeah. I'm glad you hammered that point because it's really important. You can look at, you know, a guy can have these fantastic box scores. Well, if he gets half his points on the power play, he's not going to be doing that on Edmonton's second unit because they never score. anyways, it's I'm looking at Adam Henrique here. You know, 33 years old now. In fact, I think he may have just turned 34. Mm-hmm. Yes, he did in February. 60 games played. This is Anaheim Ducks. 60 games played, 18 goals, 24 assists, 42 points, plus 3 on Anaheim Ducks. And I haven't dug too deep into, you know, exact 5-on-5. His face-off percentage is 52.9%. And he's one of those guys, his career is 49.9, but he's one of those guys that in his 30s, you know, his last 6 years, 53, 55, 55, 55, 51, 53. So he's consistently a plus. He's a lefty, but he does kill penalties 2.5 minutes a game. He also plays power play in Anaheim 2.5 minutes a game. Like, he's an all-purpose player, and he's been playing some wing apparently. I've mostly known this guy as a center, but he's he is an all-purpose player who can do a lot of things. And you know, he's got some size to him. He is 6 foot 195. I guess he's not huge, but he's not small. And he checks a lot of boxes. And
he sure does, Bruce.
You know, he
sure does.
He's expensive. He's got his contract is $5.8 million. So Anaheim would have to retain half as sort of a starting point for any trade. And I'm sure they're prepared for that. And it's, you know, like the Mantha deal. It's sort of what that's part of the seller's market, is that the seller just eats half the contract. And they might have to find a third party and pay another draft pick, the way that happened with the big trade the other night with Tanev, where the Calgary got Dallas got a third party to retain 25% and it cost him a fourth round pick.
So I'll give you quickly the Dowd Henrique comparison. At even strength, last two seasons, Henrique has averaged 12.2 minutes per game. Mm-hmm. And Dowd has averaged 11.4. So about 40 seconds less for, so it's very similar. Henrique's scoring has been 1.89 points per 60, and Dowd's has been 1.82 points per 60.
Wow, it's not close.
Yeah, so
that's impressive.
I think either of those players, to me, I'm it looks like there's at least two decent options at center who can play the role probably at third line center. And it depends, like a third line, if you do create a checking line, like a real checking line, mm-hmm. that in some ways becomes your second line because you use it against the other team's best line often, or their second best line. So freeing up someone to play easier minutes. So getting Dowd or Henrique would be huge. Just that seems to be hitting the sweet spot right now of what's available, a couple different options, players who would really fulfill a need on the owners. Because I'm not as sold on the winger thing, Bruce. Like, I like the idea of Tyler Toffoli. I like the idea of even Tarasenko. I mean, these guys are all scoring at about the same, like 2.1, 2.2 points per game, the same as Buchnevich.
And Fogel.
And Gensel. And Fogel. And Warren Fogel. 2.21 points per 60 for the last 2 years. Pavel mm-hmm. Buchnevich, 2.24. Where does the idea of trading Fogel for
a first, a second, a fourth, and a prospect, and then dump Fogel because we need the cap space to bring this guy? Like, I don't see where the win is in there.
But who's spreading? Like, who's talking about? Has anyone talked about this? Is it just a rumor? Who's talked about it?
Well, both. Yes. Buchnevich's been talked about.
Well, I don't know Buchnevich, everybody. But Fogel trading. Trading Fogel thing.
It keeps coming up as he's the obvious guy to trade because he's the guy that they can trade, who has cap hit, who doesn't have a no trade clause.
But who is saying that? Like, who would say that? I just don't, it doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Frank Saravalli, I think, was saying it. I think Elliot was saying it. I think, I heard it on at least one of TSN or Sportsnet today. One of the talking heads they had on there was talking about, you know, and every time I hear, well, they're going to have to move out Fogel to make cap space, I'm going to think, well, you're going to have to get a hell of a good player to replace Fogel the way he's been playing.
He also kills penalties now. Like, he's killing penalties.
He's one of the six.
And he is, again, he's scoring at even strength, the same as Pavel Buchnevich, guys, okay? Mm-hmm. For 2 years. This is this year and last year, same rate of scoring at even strength.
Yeah.
Seriously? This is, anyway, I think I've made my, I've ran, I've.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he, to me, he's, about you, this enough. You do a self-rental. And you rent your own guy because you're probably going to lose him at the end of the season.
You might or you might not. You might sign him. You never know.
Might be able to sign him, but he may prove to be his agent's going to be pounding the bushes to see what the price tag might be, and maybe he's a $4 million player now. And if he is, maybe the Oilers can't afford him because
maybe he's
paying
Connor
Brown $3.2 million next year.
Maybe he's a $5 million player. It's like. Hockey teams notice these things. I mean, in our analytics, like the grade A chances created and the grade A chances mistake, like when you work that out for wingers, he's only behind Zach Hyman on the team. And he's not that far behind Zach Hyman at even strength. He is crushing it as an even strength player. And he has done so since the calendar year started last year. So for the entirety of 2023, he was a really strong two-way hockey player at even strength. And then that's carried over these first months of 2024.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't convert. Like, his shooting percentage is 9.3%, which is not an elite sniper. But he sure does get involved in chances. And he gets his share of goals. I mean, he's got 31 points, and 29 of them are at even strength.
Yeah.
You know, and... he plays a bit on the second power play with the usual results there, nothing. And I think he's got 1 point on the shorthanded unit. And otherwise, I mean, but if you're going to bring in just like we went over before, we'll just reiterate, you're going to bring in a Buchnevich who's got 24 goals and 8 of them are on the power play. Well, he's not much different at even strength than the guy you already got.
Except he's probably used to playing on the top line and getting fed instead of having to create his own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not going to... Yeah. Pavel Buchnevich may be an outstanding hockey player, and I'm not going to say anything about him. Like He's real good. He might be a great addition to the Edmonton Oilers. Yeah, I can't say yes or no to that. It looks like he would be, but Warren Fogel, we've been watching him closely, and he's been getting better and better and better as an Edmonton Oiler, and I just can't imagine that they would move him. So some people are imagining it, though.
Oh, yeah.
They are, indeed.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, cleared up nothing there.
It's all rumor and innuendo. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, one thing we know that did happen today that maybe we should touch on is Sam Gagner was placed on waivers for purposes of reassigning him to Bakersfield, at least on paper, should he clear waivers. And that's an open question as to whether that'll happen, but I think probably that he will. And, you know, today there was just a hell of a lot of guys that went on waivers. I'm just trying to find the list here. It seemed like there was 10 of them.
Oh, yeah.
On waivers today, and a lot of teams doing the same thing, clearing the decks that they can send someone out quickly. If they make a trade that puts them over the cap, they can dispense with, in this case, it would be $775,000 worth of cap by reassigning, at least on paper, Gagner to Bakersfield. And they've only got one player on the team who is waiver exempt, and that's Dylan Holloway. Everybody else, the only way they can send him down is to waive him first, and that takes 24 hours. Depending on what time the trade goes through, it could take, you know, 47 hours by the time you got the guy cleared. So they're kind of pre-clearing and making, giving themselves room to maneuver. And the thing about Dylan Holloway is it's all well and good. You could send him down at a moment's notice, but maybe he's one of the guys that might be traded. And if he's on the way out, they got nobody else they can do that with. So that's, I think, why they wanted to take care of business a little bit in advance.
They're not trading Holloway because he's going to take Fogle's position next year and they'll need him.
I think probably not, but anyway, there's Arundel, Alex Stalock, Alex Bazile, Matthew Phillips. These are guys that were reassigned today that were put on waivers yesterday. And then, like I say, there was a bunch more that were placed on waivers today.
Everyone grinding up that cap money.
Yeah, they're all doing it. So, here's today's list. I found it. Sam Gagne, Edmonton. Guillaume Brisebois, Vancouver. Jacob Lucchini, Minnesota. Vinny Leteri, Minnesota. Wow, that surprised me. He was, saw him in the game, saw him pretty good. Two guys claimed on waivers. Calgary claimed Joel Hanley from Dallas today. So there's a lot of teams that are doing similar things. Like usually you get maybe one waiver in a day. And the last 2 days there's been several, and there'll be more tomorrow. There's usually a lot right around the deadline. And so in one sense, I mean, poor Sam Gagne, if he gets pipped at the post again, because of course his first 7 years here, the Oilers never made the playoffs. And then when he made it back here, they traded him at the deadline for Andreas Athanasiou in a deal that didn't end well. So he didn't get to play in the playoffs. And now
he'll be back for the playoffs, Bruce. He will be recalled
for his sake. He'll be on the roster.
He'll be on the roster in the
plays
playoffs.
Games.
He'll get in a game. We'll see Sam Gagne again. This isn't the last we've seen of Sam Gagne. That's my prediction. He's too good a player not to bet on in a game. All right, Bruce, let's leave it there. Next game is Thursday night against whom?
Is it Columbus Thursday?
Okay.
I think that's right. And then they got Buffalo and Pittsburgh on the weekend.
All right.
I think that's right. And they've got...
Is it a five-game winning streak now, then?
It's a five-game winning streak, and they've allowed seven goals total.
Here we go again.
Five games. Here we go again. 2-2, 1-1-1. You know, they gave in three or more 10 straight games, and now they're five in a row at 2-1.
The Oilers have finally found their identity, Bruce. This Oilers team. Mm-hmm. Hopefully. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, it is Columbus on Thursday, Buffalo Saturday morning, Pittsburgh Sunday morning.
Okay. Bruce, thanks for talking tonight.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.